With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Cinemas podcast, where we will be discussing Mia Hansen Love's Things to Come. I'm Sam Howlett, and this week I'm joined by Helen Seymour.
Hello.
And Jake Cunningham.
Hiya.
So this is Mia Hansen Love's follow-up to Eden. So Eden was about a young DJ discovering his way in the world, and this is about a woman in her 60s discovering her part of the world. Do you think those two films bleed into each other quite well? Do you think this is a good follow-up to Eden?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it follows on to Andrew Haig's last two films, Weekend, yeah. Which was two young men at the start of their relationship at a weekend, over a weekend after they've met, and 45 Years, where you've got a couple perhaps very near the end, of their lives, looking back on their relationships and their lives together. And I think you can definitely see those parallels between Eden, where you've got this young guy trying to find his place in the world, and the Isabel Hubbard's character in Things to Come, looking back perhaps on what she's done and what her role is now.
Definitely, I definitely see that as well. Just nice sort of parallels, almost a kind of semi-sequel, like a spiritual sequel.
Definitely.
Kind of in the way that everybody wants some as a spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused, Richard Linklater films. So Things to Come, as we mentioned there, stars Isabel Hubbard as a philosophy teacher at a high school in France, and several things happen in her personal life that causes her to sort of reevaluate her life, and she's kind of the first time in her life that she's had freedom, I guess, and it's her just going out and exploring things she's not done before. The film's got quite a nice, slow, leisurely pace. It's not, I mean, I think this film could have been a comedy in a way, a sort of old lady does funny things comedy that young people do, but it's quite meditative.
Yeah, definitely. And I think films that actually tackle philosophy as a subject, mm-hmm. rather than just having it in the subtext, you've really got to try hard to make sure you're not getting bogged down in it, and you've got to put your effort in to keep it light so that people can still focus on it without thinking you're over intellectualizing or that you're being pretentious. And I think this handles it quite well.
Yeah, I never felt it was being, I never felt I was being thrown things at me, and just I was just lost. I felt, I felt like I knew enough to go along with the characters. So we have an interview coming up later on with Isabel Huppert, but before that, I've got a question for you two. So the film is about a teacher. So I was wondering, which character in a film who isn't a teacher would you like to have been your teacher growing up, and what subject would they have taught you?
Gru from Despicable Me.
Right.
To teach me everything.
Little girl.
This is literature, really?
Too scary for a kid?
No, because I would have respected his power.
Right, his power. Yeah,
and it turns out he's got a good heart. Don't want to spoil the film for him.
Okay.
Also, driving lessons, I would have had the driver from Drive.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. Not a lot of communication, though.
Yeah, but I would have enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Plus, because I think when you did well, he would just give you a little nod. And you would think, oh, yes.
I've done it. I've got a nod.
I've done the roundabout.
And the great thing is, lessons only last 5 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true. Although I think it's health and safety hazard driving with a cocktail stick in your mouth.
Not him, he's
not. Not when you look cool enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have to have your own scorpion jacket?
Or if they supply. Yeah, time. Okay. I think if you've done well in the lesson, he would give you a cocktail stick.
Jake. Good reward. I was gone for John Doe, Kevin Spacey in Seven, because he knows a lot about the seven deadly sins, so I'd like him to teach me RE.
Nice. Because I think that is the basis of RE, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just seven.
You just have to list.
Yeah. But I like to think I'm a kinetic learner, you know?
Right.
Visual learner.
Yeah, well...
No, kinetic.
Kinetic, so I learn through action.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I think he really represents that. He really brings the lesson to life, yeah? and I think I'd really learn a lot more about religion through Kevin Spacey in Seven.
Okay.
Excellent answer.
Creepy answer. I'd go for... well, I thought that in School of Rock, technically, Dewey Finn isn't a teacher... So he'd be obviously a great music teacher and life teacher in general.
Yeah.
Also in X-Men 2, Wolverine tells Iceman's parents he teaches art to pretend to be a professor.
Yeah.
So I'd like Wolverine to teach me art.
Yeah.
Again, I think that'd be quite kinetic.
Yes, it certainly would. And you could just sort of cut 3 slashes down a canvas and take it to the Tate Modern.
I think there probably is a piece in the Tate Modern that is just 3 cuts down a canvas.
Yeah.
You struggle with clay, though, Sam.
You would, yeah.
Yes.
Potter's wheel is not going to go well.
Yeah.
Okay, so time for an interview now. We have Irena and Ryan from Curzon head office. They interviewed Isabel Hooper a few weeks ago. So enjoy.
So we are both huge fans of the film. Really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
We found a lot in it that is very recognisable. And we have a lot of very philosophical questions in keeping with the themes and tune of the film. So we're going to get stuck in. So we thought that the film is very much about the tension between action and thought, which also seems to translate as youth versus age. And this is very clear in that scene where Natalie walks into the school to teach her class, even though the school is occupied. And this reminded me a lot of my time in school, and we watched a lot of films, particularly in French class, about 1968 and revolutionary ideas. So the first question that we have is really, what do you think about revolutionary ideas? Do you think revolution is something for the young, or is it something that the old also embrace, or is it something that you give up in age?
Starting is a big question, you know. I don't have so many personal ideas about, you know, about revolution. All I know is that the way it's been shown in the film, it's quite funny because Mia, from the very beginning, at the very beginning, she takes the risk of showing a teacher, which normally should be on the what we would call the good side, so on the side of the pupils. But then she doesn't hesitate to go against certain preconceived ideas and to show the teacher who is against her young pupils. And she doesn't mean that she's like a right wing or whatsoever, whatever, you know. But it's a... So Mia, in a way... And eventually in the film, you know, when she has all these political discussions with the young people in the country, you know, one can tell that they don't have the same kind of ideas. So I think it's interesting because Mia seems to say that the good attitude is not necessarily with the young, and the bad attitude are not necessarily with the older people. You know, it's a bit more complex than this. You know. And I think it's especially palpable in that discussion at the end of the film, you know, between because he, the young man, you know, he reproaches her to not live accordingly to her ideas, and she defends quite rightly against that. She says, "I feel like I live according to my ideas," you know. So it's complex, you know. It's maybe at a certain age, you have a certain idea of what it should mean, you know, to live according to your ideas. But then, eventually in life, maybe you lose this sense of of fake idealism, you know, mm-hmm. because we, in the end, it's not really. I don't know. When they have this discussion, I feel more on her side, let's say, than on their side. Mm. And even at the beginning of the film, I shouldn't say that, but she doesn't seem to be on the young people's side. So at the beginning, it's hard to tell. I thought it was courageous for Mia, you know, not to be too predictable for mm-hmm. that matter, you know. I mean, after all, you could. One would think that she would, you know, especially at the beginning of the film, the teacher, that teacher, would be necessarily on the pupil's side, but she's not, you know. She's just to show that reality. I think it's for Mia's point of view. It's what's more concern, not to be too. Yes, predictable, you mm-hmm. know, and to just to make people have a think that things are more, you know, yeah.
Do you think that is to do with the conflict between being idealistic and having the wisdom of having lived mm-hmm. a life?
Mm-hmm.
And when you were at school, did you feel very revolutionary?
I did. Oh yes, of course. Yeah. And yes, I did, and I was happy to be so, because that gave me. I mean, I was a very young student at 68, and that was certainly a time that gave me and us. I mean, the people I was surrounded with a great awareness of, you know, a sense of how to be political, a sense of an awareness of the world, an awareness of something, and it's something that never left me, never, you know. So yes, I think it was really important. Yeah, and I think that's in a way it's the theme of the film, you know. It's maybe it might be the pupil's role to be the way they are, revolutionary, and it might be the teacher's role to think that won't solve anything, the way they do it. And she thinks that she believes more in virtues of education, and so she wants to be a teacher at that moment, you know. It's something I never really digged with Mia, you know. Uh-huh. I don't know, you know, it's no secret that the whole thing is based on her own mother's experience. Mm-hmm. So maybe also Mia just did not hesitate to show her own mother the way she was, like, you know, at that point, you know, maybe when there were strikes. She was not on the pupil side, she was on the other side, you know.
Mm.
I don't know. She doesn't make something very big out of it, but the fact is that she's not a revolutionary person at that moment, you know.
And
yet I think in her own life she creates a little of, she has her own personal revolution, the way she faces events, the way she reacts to what happens to her, the way she's not a victim is certainly more a little self, a little personal revolution than anything else, you know. So I think that the whole movie carries this kind of very subtleties, you know, that things are never the way you expect them to be, in a way.
Yeah, there's definitely a sense that kind of wisdom has taken away the fight to mm-hmm. be a revolutionary, but the reason to be a teacher is to be around all of that spirit
mm-hmm,
that is
mm-hmm.
still there, and particularly
mm-hmm.
in her. That key relationship.
Yes, and I think also she believes in the virtues of authority, you know,
mm-hmm.
which I think is right in a way also, you know. So there is nothing, except for this little fight at the beginning, you know. Nothing is too extreme, but still, you know, everybody remains or notes its own beliefs.
Mm. There is great subtlety in the way the relationship between the teacher and the ex-student is presented,
mm-hmm.
which was fascinating. We've been talking about this a lot and how there are different elements of it. Some of it looks a little bit like parent and child.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it could almost be a platonic love
sure.
relationship,
mm-hmm.
and in a different film,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it
probably would happen,
mm.
but she
yes.
doesn't fall into this kind of facility.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's one of the joys of the film, I think, and to really watch two actors like you and Roman Kolinka working together
mm-hmm.
in that. And I wonder if you had discussed this, or you had discussed the relationship between the two characters.
No,
and
it's not something we really discussed, you know, because it was all there. I mean, the writing was so clear, the dialogue was so clear, so it was, you know, most of the time when the script is that well written, it's just about how filling up spaces and giving flesh and substance to this existing thing that exists on the paper, you know. but it was all very easy, actually.
Great.
And all very exciting also, because one could feel everything is so much loaded, everything is so much, you know, you have all what you said, you have this potential thing which could happen, which, and it's also very emotional, because I'm thinking about, the, you know, when he first takes her back to the station, you know, and when he's back in the car, you can feel all the something which could have happened, which did not happen, which will never happen, and it's very moving, you know. It's, you know.
We have one more question about this idea of the teacher, and we were wondering if you had had an influential teacher as an adolescent who may have inspired you or guided you to become an artist or to become a political person, or in what way?
No, I remember I had a very good philosophy teacher, and so I remember, and I still can see it on my youngest son, you know, who just finished his studies in high school, how much he was, because in France, you know, in the last year we do study philosophy in a way that I understand you don't, for example, in England or in America, because philosophy is the class itself is called philosophy class, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We say to be en philo, which means to be in the final year of your high school, which means something, you know. And I could tell, so it's not only in my time, but on my son also. Young people are interested in philosophy, because immediately, even if a young people doesn't read, which is unfortunately the case most of the time now, which was not the case in our time, or maybe in your time, but certainly not in my time, but now you have to admit that they don't read anymore. But even if they're not interested in literature, because it's very interesting, difficult to understand. I noticed that to make a young boy like my son, you know, being interested in classic, you know, because it's really far from their reality. But when it comes to philosophy, immediately it clicks, you know, because it comes to you know, it comes more across psychology or politic or ideal, so it's much more concrete and much more real. So it was certainly the case for myself. So I liked my philosophy teacher, and I was interested in what she said, yes. Plus, I think she was quite, daring in her statements. Mm. So I liked her.
Did this fit into your desire to become an actor? Or work?
Oh, I wouldn't say so, no. I wouldn't go that far. No. No, it just gave me, you know, sense of taste for, you know, for reading, for being interested in various things, but that did not necessarily drew me to acting. You know, I don't know what drew me to it. You know, actually, it's one of those, you know, inner movements that take you somewhere. Because I don't think I was not in the kind of environment which allowed me to say I want to be an actress. So, but indeed, I did. Became an actress quite soon and quite early, so I don't know.
On the other side of that same question, though, I feel that people need mentors in life.
Need mentors.
Need a mentor. I think it's a good thing for someone to find.
Yeah.
Do you, obviously you're a parent, so you teach your children things.
Teach, I'm not sure, you transmit things more than teaching, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a situation similar to we see in things to come, where you've been asked to mentor someone, or you felt yourself in a position where someone's looking to you for guidance that maybe you didn't have a responsibility to because they're not your child?
No, because even, let's say, for example, if I can speak about my own field, people, you know, always think that if you work with younger people, you would have this, you know, kind of protective attitude or teach. It's not certainly not in the acting field, you know, because especially acting is so much about doing something for the first time, even though you've done it a number of times like I did, you know. It's so much about, you know, being there for the first time, so it doesn't make any difference between me and a very young child who'd never acted before, you know. He might know maybe not more, but as much as I know myself, you know, so I don't feel this kind of a responsibility, or certainly not, you know. No, it's not. Plus, it's not quite my attitude in general.
Yeah.
Mm.
So you can be nice, you can be, of course, but not feeling that you would teach things.
Okay.
No, I don't think so.
I guess because each role, you know, different people have different perspectives, and like you say, maybe they understand their part more than they could.
Oh, yes.
Need
yeah.
help with.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
more about support than
mm-hmm.
than learning
mm-hmm.
and teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So you talked a little bit earlier about the role of a mother in the film as well, and we were struck by the fact that there are these four generations of women in this film, which is quite refreshing and unusual. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about working with Edith Skob as your mother and the relationship between those two characters. I was reminded of this quotation from Oscar Wilde's play where he says, all women become like their mothers, that is their tragedy. No man does, and that is his. So do you think that Natalie will become like her mother, or
well,
is there something
I don't think she will, because she's obviously very different from her mother, you know. But the funny thing about it is that Natalie became an intellectual, whereas her mother is a former model, so she's more superficial. And it's quite funny, you know, to have the daughter being not being happy about her mother buying too many clothes like a mother
yes.
would do. So she reverses the normal agenda for that, you know. So it's full of, you know, irony, and yet what's also is interesting in the film that all your life until your own mother dies, you know, you are always being balanced between these two positions, you know, being a daughter, being a mother, and still being a daughter, because hopefully for in the better cases, you know, for most of not most of your life, but the big part of your life, you are both, you know, you are, and I think that she points out that very very in a very funny way. Even though the mother becomes almost the child to her daughter, you know, because she's so childish and so irresponsible to the point that she has to put her into an institute. But so the whole thing is so subtle. It's so complex, you know, being the still a daughter, but still already the mother of your daughter, of your own mother, you know. So you are always your own personality is completely split, and then you have also she has to face her own children who go away, so they are, even though yeah, they're still very young, especially her son, but, you know, he's not a little boy anymore, so so that's what everybody goes through, I guess, I believe.
The daughter herself is pretty grown up in facing the father and saying, you need to make a decision, this is important. I thought that was quite an interesting way for her to break away from the mother, Natalie, and having that
yes.
role. So
and... And somebody, yes, made the remark, you know, I like very much when the daughter at the hospital burst into tears, you know, because actually when we did the scene, I didn't think about it. Eventually somebody made the remark. I thought she was breaking into tears in the first place when we did it, just more because, let's say, the husband leaves the room, and Natalie, when he leaves the room, says, oh, I was fed up. I'm happy that he left the room. So I hope.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I thought that the daughter, I still believe it, but I thought that the daughter was bursting into tears as an emotional reaction, like every young woman would have, because she just had a baby, so she's more emotional. But the emotion comes through more because she has she's sad that her mother says that, you know, like she wished at that moment that her parents could be reconciled.
Yeah.
Then someone went further, I don't know if you understood it that way, and said that no, she burst into tears, not only for that, but also because, in a way, she is responsible for the separation of her parents, because she said to her father, you should choose, you know.
Yeah.
Which I didn't think in the moment. I thought she was only emotional because her mother says this very ironical thing,
mm-hmm.
and she's not ready for this kind of irony at that moment, you know.
Yeah.
So she has the ghost of a perfect relationship between her parents at that moment. Mm-hmm. She wants to have this kind of comfort, you know.
But also the responsibility of a choice.
But also she has to carry the responsibility of
the
separation.
The choice may have also set
yeah.
the mother free
yeah.
at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in that case, if it's the case that she has to carry the responsibility for the separation, I think she's wrong, because at some
mm-hmm.
point anyway, maybe the parents
yeah.
would have split, you know.
Absolutely.
Even though she accelerated the movement by saying to her father, you should talk to her.
We have one final very quick question, which is that you've worked on over 100 films with some of the greatest filmmakers in the world. Is there anybody, dead or alive, a filmmaker who is on your wish list, you wish you had worked with them, or you would like to work with them now?
Many people. Well, many, many people, all the great people who made the history of cinema. But existing directors, yes, but I always find it really vain, you know, to claim that, you know, and I have a sense of dignity and of pride. So, I mean, that should come up to me.
Absolutely.
And
thank you so
will.
Much.
Okay. Thank you very
thank
much.
You very
okay, so that was Irena and Ryan talking to Isabel Huppert. I realised I've keep going back and forth between Isabel Huppert and Isabel Huppert.
Yeah,
so.
Let's be Philistines. Let's Huppert.
Let's Huppert this.
Yeah, let's pronounce that T.
That was a great interview. A lot of things to pick up on there that we can discuss about the film, I think. So as usual, we're going to talk about the film in kind of a broader sense, and then we'll warn you when we're about to go into spoiler territory. Although, to be honest, it's not really the kind of film to spoil. It's not really a plot-driven film, but we will flag a warning that there's some third act things that you might want to go in without knowing.
Definitely.
Okay, so I think we should start with where the interview starts. This idea about action versus thought. So as a philosophy teacher, she deals with revolutionaries and people who have put their thoughts into action. But she herself, Isabel Huppert's character, Natalie, has never seemed to do that. I mean, how did you think this concept of action versus thought came across in the film?
Well, it's one of the earliest scenes in the film is her having to get through the students that are striking outside of the school
mm-hmm.
to get through it. And then you've got the students that are willing to actually go to the class. So even within the young people, there is that divide between action
mm.
and thought.
I think it also raises the question of how helpful actions are, or if you're going to act, you need to act in a certain... Like, acting just isn't enough. Like, just fundamentally acting on your thoughts sometimes isn't that helpful. Like... Where Fabian seems really pleased with himself that he slept outside all night, but I kind of was thinking, yes, he is acting on it, but how much is that actually helping the fundamental thought that he had, or his cause that he wants to do? Does it really make a difference that he slept outside all night?
Mm.
Like
mm.
I don't know. And I think all of these this kind of action versus thought is kind of so relevant now. And I think it's always been relevant. I think it's something that everybody kind of struggles with.
Hmm.
But when you look at the political situation at the moment, I think it's really relevant. It's something to reflect on and just fundamentally in people's lives.
Yeah, definitely. And Hubbard touches on it in the interview where she said something along the lines of just all the old people didn't do the bad thing and all the young people didn't do the good thing.
Mm.
It's split between them, and I think sort of post Brexit decision, a lot of people were saying, like, "Oh, the old people did this, and the young people did that." And I think the film tries to say that no, just because the young people are young, they're not right, and
yeah,
just because the old people are old, they're not jaded and out of sight of everyone else.
Yeah,
I think this idea of action being far more popular. Or being far more useful has really come into play in the US election right now, because you've got so many people saying that they're going to vote for Donald Trump because he's going to
do something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do something, not even knowing what it is, but they like it because he says he's going to do something.
Right.
I think it's interesting that, you know, that conversation about action versus thought, we immediately went on to old versus young as well, like without even being prompted. And that's a binary that a lot of films play into, that in life you have old people that think, well, all old people think one thing and all young people think another thing. And since, like, the 1950s, films have often dealt with old people being antagonists to young people, whereas here that binary is kind of blended more, I felt, like the old and the young, especially after the two events that push Natalie into being less of a thinker and more of a doer in a way. Well, how do you think about that, about old and young in the film?
Yeah, I mean, you could almost call it a sort of art house silver pound film.
Yeah,
because it's, I guess, like, we've had,
what does,
like,
that mean?
So sort of Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, that, oh, kind of, like, oh, quartet, yeah, yeah, yeah. Song for Marion, these kind of films where it's like, oh, we'll make the old people the lead character.
Yeah. Okay.
But and the old people can do young people things too. Oh. And I think it's looking at that a bit more seriously as to what that can actually mean, and that older people in film don't just need to play the role of the old person.
Yeah. I think that's true. I think that, you know, for a film that has a woman in her 60s in the lead role, it manages to avoid those kind of silver pound trappings that you mentioned there. Yeah, like sort of Lady in the Van or Marigold Hotel. I also think that these films where you have an older person who suddenly decides to relive their youth or something are often comedies with men.
Mm-hmm.
So things like About Schmidt, The Bucket List, even like Dirty Grandpa, you know, they're often kind of, they're just something slight, they come across slightly lecherous. But this handles it very well and very tastefully, I thought.
I think last week's film, Giulietta, is a good
that's
one
another
to
one.
Compare with as well. Because another lead female character who's looking back on her life, but it takes a different turn with it. But I think that's another really good one. I really enjoyed that.
So I think I just want to point out, actually, that in the past sort of just the past sort of 12 months, we've had a few films starring women in their 60s as the lead roles. So like Florence Foster Jenkins, Eye in the Sky, mentioned before Lady in the Van, but things like 45 Years as well. These are films that they're not huge, but they are popular. So it's good. And they're not just there to be laughed at, I think.
Oh, yeah,
the key.
Definitely.
So I think that's a good thing.
Survivalist had good older lady.
You're right. Yeah, I always forget about Survivalist.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That was one of the first episodes. Mm. So episode 5 of this show, wasn't it?
Yeah, all those months ago. Okay, should we talk about Natalie for a bit now? The lead in this, speaking of protagonists in their 60s. I mean, what did you think of her, particularly from like the first scene to sort of her journey throughout the film and her arc? How do you think of her as a protagonist?
I thought she was really interesting. Mm-hmm. I thought that she, because of the nature of her work, she almost felt compelled to be very calm and collected with this chaos around her. And I almost felt like under the surface, you almost were wanting her to just kind of break with it. Well, it's in the trailer and it's in the description and reviews.
Yeah, I think we can say what happens.
Yeah. So her husband leaves her. And her mother dies within a very short space of time.
Yeah.
But because she's teaching philosophy, you're kind of expected to have your thoughts completely in order.
And she's not acting broken. And I guess that leads to the question, if you don't act like a broken person, are you not a broken person? Going back to that action thought thing. I bloody loved her, mate.
Yeah.
She's so great. Just,
yeah.
I really, really liked her. I wish, like, I think we would get on really well.
Yeah.
And she dealt with it. She was strong, man.
Yeah.
Like, she had a lot going on, and it didn't shy away from showing her vulnerable moments. There were times when she was really upset, but then she pulled herself together and. Everything, the way she carried herself, the way she made sure she kept on doing things like she goes for walks and things, and like these aren't kind of, oh, I'm feeling really sad, so I'm going to go and cry in a wood thing. It's like, you know, I'm going and I'm going to just enjoy this nature. Mm. And she seems like such a strong person.
Mm.
And it was so good to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there were moments where she is completely breaking down, but they don't take over the film.
Yeah.
Which they very easily could have.
Yeah, you could break into your cliche Oscar moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe a little like in The Commune. Which is the kind of pinnacle of the film, is this big breakdown of a woman. And yeah, this doesn't do that, which is great.
Yeah, and it's not a kind of blighty, stiff upper lip, the problems.
No.
She is dealing with it as well, but she's just confronting it and really thinking about the best course of action for her mentally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Now we've talked about Natalie. Let's talk about Natalie and Fabian, who I guess is, in a way, the second lead of the film, if there is going to be one. In terms of screen time, and in terms of effect on the film.
Yeah, and if you looked at the posters and things, I think you would think Fabian was the... If you had not seen anything from the film, other than perhaps the poster, you might think this is like a graduate situation going on.
That's where I thought it was going. And they talk about this in the interview, but I really thought, okay, as soon as the husband left, I thought, oh... it's going to be that kind of film. She's going to meet up with Fabian and they're going to become lovers.
Mm. And actually when the husband announces that he's leaving, the first person that she suggests he's leaving her for is a student?
Mm.
And so you think...
That seed's planted in your brain. There's also a scene earlier on where the husband meets Fabian and he seems a bit... doesn't really like him, said, oh, he's just sort of a do-gooder kind of thing. And then she says, oh, are you jealous? Mm. So even then, it's kind of hinted that she could have a relationship with Fabian. But I'm glad they don't. I'm glad they didn't go down that route.
Yeah, and I think it is interesting to have this relationship between two people that is a platonic intelligence.
And equal.
Yeah.
They're equals.
It's not done enough in film.
No.
It's not done enough at all, I think, even in books and everything. Like, friendship or platonic relationships just aren't talked about enough, because it seems that everybody wants to focus on the romantic relationship, which totally has its place. But it's so refreshing to see something that doesn't put that as the focus of the film and doesn't end in a kind of, and then they got together. Mm. Like, oh my goodness.
And it is it's a very sexy idea as well.
Right.
The older philosophy teacher and
who
the younger.
Who is very attractive.
Yeah, I mean, she looks stunning in this film. And you can totally see that in a lesser film than just going for that, because that's the easiest route.
Yeah.
And it really challenges us, because we're expecting it to go a certain way. And it really doesn't, and it's a better film for it.
Absolutely. Okay, so before we go into spoiler territory, let's talk about the cat, Pandora.
Pandora!
So this is her mother's cat that she has to take in after her mother goes to a care home and then dies. And the cat, I think we all agree, is a metaphor for her, someone who's recently lost the person that they were with for all these years, and can't seem to find a suitable place for them to be on their own anymore. But did you feel like this was a bit overused? A bit too on the nose,
I think I enjoyed the cat being there as an idea, but I think it just got a bit too much screen time.
It's a big cat as well.
Yeah.
Which is good. You don't often see overweight cats in film, so I'm really glad that they're breaking out and finally showing a different, rather than just same old.
Yeah. It does ring true, because...
underweight cat, you know?
Yeah. Unreasonable body standards for cats.
Yeah, I know. I'm just finally glad to see an obese cat on getting some screen time.
Obese cats are people too.
I know.
Yeah. We need to see more people being friends with fat cats.
Yeah.
Yeah?
And that's what this film is.
A bit inside Llewellyn Davis-y,
very
old cat thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, it was just... it was something that has been done before and been done better.
Yes. Yeah.
I felt like that this film had a lot of more going for it without the cat.
Yeah, and there's a particular moment where it almost felt like the story of the cat could have been done, and then it comes back in again later, and it did just feel like, as I said, I don't mind the cat story being there. Like, I think it does add to it. It's just rammed home a bit too much. There's just a bit too much cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so before we talk about the end of the film, if people see one film this week, why should they see Things to Come?
Well, I think Isabel Hubbard as in terms of a performance, it's a very different performance. It feels it's like a non-Oscar performance. She's not amping up the emotions, and she works well with everyone in the film, and she completely carries it.
Agreed.
You're smitten, aren't you, Jake?
Yeah, completely.
I agree. Also, just same reason why anyone should see a film. It's a good story, told really well.
Yeah, so, well, for me, it was... I think it was a bit too slow at points. Like, when she goes to the commune, and, like, there's a lot of... The cat's doing something, she's talking to someone else, she picks up a book. These are all... The shots were very quick, and it was just a very quick succession, and it just felt like it went on a bit slightly too long. That sequence for me.
The sequence. I was going to say it's quite a short film. Mm.
Yeah, just that sequence at the commune. Because she goes, for the first time she goes to the commune.
Mm.
But apart from that, I actually really enjoyed it. I think, it's really nice to watch these kind of films that don't bombard you with melodrama.
Yeah, and I think it's a very rich film if you want to pause at every 5 minutes and analyse what books have been picked out and what quotes have been said.
And names
which
dropped.
Which is probably lost on me a bit, to be fair.
But it's not so heavy that you feel like you're missing out if you don't know that. Like, it's still light enough to be a very entertaining, enjoyable film, and then you can get into the analysis of it if you desperately wanted to.
I know, Jake, you were saying beforehand that maybe the poetry of it was lost in translation a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. Like, even down to the title of the film in French, it's L'Avenir, which sounds...
The future.
Yeah, which sounds much nicer, perhaps not like in that trailer voice.
The future.
Which I think sounds a bit nicer than Things to Come, and the way that they talk. And you've got these really lovely sounds that she makes and other characters make that we don't quite have in this language, where they go, oh!
Yeah. And
a lot of
oh la la!
So many oh la la. So please do see the film and then come back just into the last 5 minutes of the show. So, it doesn't really end, per se. It doesn't feel like an ending. That's not a criticism. It feels like life will just go on for them. It doesn't really feel like this is the end of...
Yeah, I think the whole film just feels like a chapter.
Yeah, definitely.
I love the ending.
Yeah.
Such a great shot to finish with, and good music that we have discovered is from Roger and Val have just got in.
Yeah, the great BBC Two sort of comedy drama with which is just Dawn French and Alfred Molina, each episode in their house. Really good show.
Unchained Melody, yeah?
Yeah, it's Unchained Melody, a slower cover of that. I really liked the ending, actually. So her daughter has a baby, and that's kind of like life going on. That things often end with a birth, to sort of show you that these characters' lives don't just end when the film ends, that there is more to this.
Yeah, I thought this was also quite funny, because when the daughter provokes the dad, as she learns that he's having an affair, the first thing that the dad says after she says that she needs to talk to him about something, he says, "You're not pregnant, are you?"
Probably was.
Yeah, it's just a throwaway line at the start, but it's a nice tie-in to the end of the film.
Yeah. She finally gets rid of the cat. It lives in the commune. You mentioned earlier that you kind of felt like that should have happened earlier.
Yeah, so if you've watched the film, you know she goes to the commune sort of halfway through, and the cat goes out at night, and then Hubbard's character does her own thing, and then the cat is there in the morning. And to me, that kind of felt like it was saying, you don't need to worry about everything. You don't need to be anxious, because perhaps sometimes you can't. It will just work out.
I'd like to see that more. Like, I can just leave stuff be. It's such a good kind of way of looking at things. And I'd love to see a film that really deals with that.
Yeah, and like, when the cat leaves, she worries about it, but she's got no control over it.
Yeah.
Like, there is no way that she can be aware of what the cat is doing. She eventually just leaves it, and then in the morning it is there and it is fine. And I felt like that was part of the message of the film as well, that you do lose control sometimes, but that's not necessarily the end of the world at all.
Yeah.
And the cat could have just stayed at the commune then, rather than coming back with her and then going away and then ending up there again.
Yeah, I think that's what I meant when I said that the commune scenes were a bit slow, just because there was sort of a bit of back and forth between them, and I felt like some of the scenes at the end could have been moved around a bit and had her just go there. I don't know. But also, I really loved the last scene she has with Heinz, the husband, in the kitchen when she's prepping for Christmas.
Mm. Yeah.
And he's kind of hinting that he wants to be invited, I felt. And she's like, goodbye.
Yeah.
She says, I think you should go. I'm quite busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that she really takes ownership of her situation well, even though it's like everyone else's actions have what put her where she is.
But she's in control.
Yeah.
It was so good. I'm going to take that. I quite want to be her, actually. I think when there's someone at my house who I don't want there, I'm just going to say,
I'm busy.
I think you should go.
So if you enjoyed Things to Come, there's plenty more we think you'll like on Curzon Home Cinema. So Mia Hansen-Love's previous film, Eden, is available to watch. You've also got Valley of Love, which stars Isabel Hubbard and Gerard Depardieu as a divorced couple who are reunited after the death of their son. And then we've got Piano Teacher, Michael Haneke's film, and Amour, another Haneke film, which both star Isabel Huppert. So we really think you'll enjoy those. Also another thank you to CSR for letting us use their studio. Really appreciate that. So next week we'll be talking about Captain Fantastic.
Yep, talking about Captain Fantastic next week.
Interview with director Matt Ross as well.
Yep, and make sure you tune in for that, because listeners to the podcast can win a signed Captain Fantastic poster signed by Viggo Mortensen, Aragorn himself.
Awesome.
So do tune in.
Okay, so that is a goodbye from Jake.
Au revoir.
Oh, très bien. A goodbye from Ellen.
Cheerio.
No. No.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.